So yeah, we've got a bunch of, I think we had a kind of a bunch of topics, but I think really just kind of your story opens up the conversation in a really great way. And
Totally, yeah.
yeah, I think that's like a just a great way to start off. I don't want to introduce you. I don't want to put words in your mouth of how you see yourself. So if, let's just kick it off with that. We're just kind of gonna roll into this if that's cool with you. Can you
Yeah,
tell everybody who
sure.
Shannon is? It Malseed? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, I do. I do say mole seed.
Who is Shannon Malseed?
Wow, that is a big question, isn't it? Really?
I love the question. It's like we just go right to the heart of it.
Yeah, so I am a ex-professional road cyclist, but my journey through sport starts about at the age of 8. I jumped into the pool. I saw one of my friends competitively swimming, and I was like, Dad, if she can do that, so can I. And I want to beat her and I want to win. So I've always had that grit and determination to be the best that I can be. And that carried me throughout my swimming career, I guess you could call it, until I was about 14, and the little club in my little hometown shut down. So I kind of was without a sport for a few years there, which was unusual for me, but I think I liked it in my teenage rebellion. I was like, I'm just gonna move away from sport. And then the bug came back and bit me with triathlon when I was about 16. And so I moved into triathlon, and my dad had been a triathlete, so the inspiration came from him and also a few of the guys that I looked up to in my town. My coach and mentor at the time, Paul Beattie, was like my favorite person in the world, probably aside from my dad. And so he had also been a triathlete, and between him and my dad, they shaped me into the best little triathlete that I could be. And I actually went kind of far with that, I suppose, in my own pursuit. I qualified for the 2020 World Championships in London in my age group. So not, you know how there's like age group in triathlon and then there's ITU. So I was in my age group, and I actually didn't go because I decided that I wanted to do cycling instead. So that was my first like big decision that I'd made. As a young kid, still, I was only 17 or 18 at the time. I can hear a question coming.
I always have a question, but I'm thinking, so we were just like, I want to be a cyclist, so I'm not going to go smash this race out. Like, why don't you just go do the race and then still
So, what
transition?
happened? What
I'm
actually
like, there's a
happened
story there that.
was, yeah, I went to a bike race and it was just for fun. Like, I mean, I was always only doing all of this for fun. And it was the first real race that I'd done just against other females. Like, I hadn't done much in a women's only peloton. I'd raced against a lot of guys and a lot of handicaps, as that's what they're called when some riders go off first and there's a time gap and then other riders try to chase them. So they'll send the weaker riders first. And then other riders are coming, and it all comes together at the end, and then you sprint to win. So I'd done a lot of those style of racing in my local community and around Victoria, but the bigger races were always quite far away from my little hometown. But we did travel to a certain event, and there was the Women's National Road Series teams were there, like representing their own teams. And I had no idea about the NRS. Like, I just was a very naive young triathlete slash cyclist. And I was just attacking the shit out of the peloton the whole time until I got dropped and didn't finish the race. And there was a team there who loved that about me, and they could see my potential as a little 17-year-old. And I say little, but I was probably the same size as I am now because I just didn't grow for ages. So, yeah. I was doing that, and then they approached me and they said they'd love for me to be a part of their team in the following year. And I was like, cool, well, I'll just like do the cycling thing and do the triathlon thing. And they're like, it's it's a bit more serious than that. Like if you're doing cycling, you can't really go away and do your triathlon events. You've got to be here racing the season with us. And yeah, they talked to me about how much more training I'd have to do on the bike. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is like a big jump into cycling. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, to give you perspective, when I did decide that that's what I wanted to do, I got a new coach, and one of the first weeks of training that he gave me, I looked at it and I cried and I rang him and I said, I can't do this. I can't ride 60 kilometers in one go. And he was like, trust me, 60 kilometers is going to start to be your short ride. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, what? So that's how kind of new I was into all of it.
What year was that?
That was 2012, 13, okay. Something around there.
That's crazy what happens in the next 5 years. Okay. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 'cause people who are listening might not know your story. So it's like, okay, so you get into this, you're like, I'm in. Where does it go from there?
So then it's racing the NRS and getting...
And this that's just like bombing through Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So all of the domestic racing that was on back then. And in my opinion or my view, there was more racing back then. There was more opportunity to race. It's actually thinned out quite a lot now in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to find racing for... Mm-hmm. the Peloton, the top level races to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I was fortunate in that there were quite a few races that I could go to, whether it was National Road Series or the State Series in my state in Victoria. So I had quite a lot of events that I could prepare for and get fit for and learn how to race and all of that sort of stuff. And so that's what I was focusing on for the first few years of my development. And then there was also a national road program at the time, which has since gone. So it's kind of a tragic story, really, with Australian cycling.
I don't think it's just Australia. Do you know Keegan Swerbel? He's an American guy. He lives in Spain. He has... he started posting videos on YouTube, and we did a podcast maybe, I don't know, a couple months ago. And he was just talking about like, I'm on this Portuguese team. I'm kind of an outsider, you know, we're a continental squad. I feel like the UCI is kind of even not really supporting us. What do American riders do now if they don't want to become a crit racer? Very similar story. We're actually going to do another podcast, just like kind of chatting about that, because it's a tough scenario for people that are trying to make it. Like, unless you are just this freak that can go world tour as a young kid, the middle is very quickly disappearing. And so I mean, it's a business. It's just a really tough business. It's not
and you need a lot of money, like, because in order to make that leap, if we talk about those landing pads in the middle, like you're talking about, are kind of very... there's a big leap to get to the next one. There's not many in between ones, and they are kind of disappearing. So the one of the leapfrog pads that I had back then was the National Road Program, and they would select 5 riders to go overseas for 2 months at a time each year and race in the European some European races. So sometimes we even got UCI events to go to, which have since then turned into like world tour racing events. So they were pretty high level, and we were these young girls or these inexperienced riders from Australia who were the best in Australia, but we were still quite new to that type of racing. But if we didn't get that, I don't know where that would have come from for me, because I didn't have, you know, $10,000 to drop on doing that for myself or doing that on my own, let alone the know-how to, like, how do I even get myself overseas and then get myself to races and prepare. And like, it's such a cultural shift. Mm-hmm. And there's so many moving parts that a kid like me back then had no idea how to do. Like, I, to put in perspective, I had never flown overseas, and I was so nervous to go over to Europe for the first time that the team manager of the Australian national team who was coming with us, I kind of cornered him at the airport, and I was like, so first of all, you have to meet me at the airport because I don't know where I need to go. I was so nervous that then I was like, and then you have to stay with me until we get on the plane, and then hopefully we sit together. Like, this is how nervous I was. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so he actually was so sweet, and he took me through the whole process. And then once I'd done it once, I was like, oh, okay, it's not that bad. But yeah, it was a big, big leap from small country town girl vibes who had no idea what she was doing. So I don't know how girls and guys do it now. I know that there's a lot of them kind of banding together and trying to make it work and give themselves those opportunities to go and race, but you still need the money behind you as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a big investment, right?
It's huge. Yeah. So. I think either, you know, personal sponsors, it seems like I've heard people as like, they had a family friend that had money and was like, I want to support this person's dream. It's like, well, damn, you won the lotto to have that hookup, and it's tough. Yeah. So you guys go around and do that. When did you join TIBCO then? Was that 2016?
So actually 2018. So oh, wow. I got offered a contract for 2017, and there was something inside me that just was like, it's not the time yet. I also was studying at the time, and I wanted to get that finished off before I went and raced overseas, and I just felt like I needed another year. So
what were you studying? Sorry to cut you off.
Naturopathy.
Which is?
So it's to become a naturopath, like natural medicine.
Got it.
Yeah, that sort of stuff, which I haven't used, by the way.
I was wondering if that tied in to where we're like now. Maybe not. Okay.
It seems doesn't. Like, long story short, maybe, I never used like it.
I'm sure you're drawing something from it. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe. There's
like definitely... he has no idea what he's talking about. That's adorable.
No. I definitely could. I really could. I really could tie it in with my coaching, but I just don't. I don't have the passion in that aspect anymore.
Mm.
I still love natural medicine, and I still would totally use that for myself and do, but I just don't have the passion to be the naturopath, like be the person that someone comes to see. Anywho.
You follow your passion, that is for sure.
Yes, I do. Always.
Good thing.
Yeah.
So you finish then, you finish the naturopathy in 2017?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. 2018, you joined TIBCO. What's the vibe before you then? I don't know if you'll tell us, or I'll have to say like what happened in 2018, that it's just like mega. But like, so what were you feeling like, hey, I'm ready to go just absolutely shred, I'm going to crush everyone? Or were you more timid, or where are you at going into the 2018 season?
Oh, man, I was ready to crush. The first race that I did in 2018 was the nationals, and I won it.
Oh, that was the first race. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's wild.
Yeah.
So
they're okay. In January in Australia, so our nationals right. are a ride at the beginning of the year, which is why so many of the pros, when you then turn, so I kind of had it really good because I wasn't pro yet in preparation for nationals. So I hadn't raced a full pro season, because what happens is you race a full pro season, then you have a small off season, and then you have to prepare for nationals if you want to race it. And it's a freaking hard prep, right? Yeah. It's like Australian summer. It's a tough tough circuit that they've had for 18 years, the same circuit.
Wow. So is the same circuit as the men do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen maybe a couple years ago, I watched it. That is savage.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's this really specific type of event that you've got to prepare for like a lot of VO2 max type and heat training. And yeah, so I did all of that without having a pro season in my legs. So I was quite like so nail pin focused on that event. And I also lived in Ballarat, which is where the nationals are held. Mm. So I was training on that circuit every day. I knew everything about it. And I went into full like brutal, this is my race mode. And so I definitely hit the ground running in 2018 and was fortunate enough for things to play out the way that I wanted them to on that day. And so it was a very, very good introduction into my professional career. That's for sure.
That is so wild. I don't know if anybody else can say that. I wonder, has anyone won a national championship on their first race? it's like even verbalizing that just sounds insane. So because I want to talk about like what you're doing now, but so how long then? I mean, we're in 2023 and I don't believe you own a bike, is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So people are like, wait a minute, hold on a second, you won nationals, you've won in, people can go through her pro cycling stats, like, wait, you went in and crushed. There's some other good like interviews about you throughout that time period. You raced for 2 years, right? And then you were just like, this isn't my dream. She just chucked the deuce for those not on YouTube who are listening. What's tell us about that.
Yeah, so I raced for 3 years, in total. And the first year, which started out with that, quickly spiraled into like the craziest manic year, which ended in ultimate burnout and me begging to go home in August, like to end my season early, just like, please get me out of here. I am done.
Europe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we went to China and I also did the Commonwealth Games. So there was a lot of travel. So from Australia to then Europe to do the spring classics, I think I'm getting my timing right. And then it was either China first and then the Commonwealth Games back in Australia and then back to Europe to race pretty much every World Tour event on the calendar without any other races. So we only raced World Tour that year as a team that, in my opinion, was not ready for that. Mm. I certainly wasn't ready to be smashed into World Tour after World Tour after World Tour after World Tour. I also had a pretty traumatic crash in the spring. I was off the back of the peloton and like way off the back, and coming through the back through the convoy with a group, we got to the back of the convoy where the ambulance is, and the ambulance had to deviate off course, and so they kind of pulled to the right to do almost like a hook turn. Mm. And I thought they were pulling right so we could come up on the left, and so I led our pack like through, and as I was coming through they swung it left and just T-boned me. And so that was pretty crazy to experience, being hit in a bike race by an ambulance, which then didn't even pick me up. They just kept going because they had to follow the race and I wasn't injured enough for them to stop for me. And I wasn't speaking the language, so I didn't understand what was happening. And I was just screaming, like, where are they going? Where are they going? Because I couldn't walk. Like, I had essentially a massive corky in my leg. I don't know if I'm speaking the American language, but it's like when you get hit real hard and you know how your leg just goes dead.
Okay.
It's like a a really dead feeling. And so, but I didn't know, is my leg broken? Like, what has happened? And so there was a race medic who did stop for me and took me to the hospital. And that was it. I just got taken to the hospital. I didn't have a phone. I didn't have a bag. I didn't have anything. I just had myself, and my bike was somewhere. And so that was a really crazy experience to be thrown into in one of my first races as a pro as well. And then so recovering from that kind of trauma was hard emotionally without the support that I would have back home. And yeah, and then it was just world tour race after world tour race after world tour race. And I was just getting like smashed, you know, like just absolutely. It's like every time if you're in a boxing ring and you get hit back, and as soon as you come up for, you know, to face it again and to try again, you get smacked back down. That's what it felt like all year, until essentially I was like, okay, I need to go home. I'm just mentally in a hole. Physically, I'm so underprepared for these races. Like, I'm just not at that level. And yeah, so I went home and spent a good few months just trying to recover myself mentally and physically from that year. Still really determined to come back and give it like everything. And so the next year is kind of a blur. Like, we didn't do as many world tour events. It was an emphasis on trying to develop the team better before we go into those big, hard races. We still did some, and we still did hard racing and gave ourselves that opportunity to see what it was like at the next level, at that world tour level. And we were kind of like an opportunist team, right? We had some really strong, like, riders, like Allison Jackson was in the team. And we were still going for things like, let's try and get in a break, and then when it comes down to a sprint, we'll go for these certain riders. And that was kind of our main plan for most races, was like, be opportunistic, try and do what you can with a breakaway, and then we'll try and go for the sprint at the end. But we never were strong enough to have like a big lead out team or a climber that was like definitely gonna win, you know. So we were that opportunistic team, and we all knew that, and that was kind of fun to be. I liked that style of racing, to be the ones going in breaks and stuff like that. But at the same time, I was also trying to get my body right for the fact that I had, in my preparation for nationals and probably just being a cyclist in general, I had slipped into red S for quite a number of years. And so I knew, this is a long story, sorry, but no, I knew that good. My bone density had declined quite rapidly, which was scared me. So I got a bone density scan, and I had osteopenia, and that's the step before you get osteoporosis. And I was like, that's bad. That's real bad. I don't want to be frail bones, especially in cycling, but in my older age, I don't want to be falling and breaking stuff and not being able to recover. So that was always in the back of my mind that year. And as a result, I got a really good dietitian, but I put on weight because my body had been so used to being in that starvation mode that
let me ask you that question, because I think it's so red S relative, is it relative energy deficiency syndrome? And is that just from not eating enough or not recovering properly? Or do you know how you develop that?
Yeah. So it's from underfueling and spent in the energy expenditure that you are pumping out on a daily, weekly basis, and you're not getting the fuel in to support that. So we have some vital signs as females and males, but females can see it more obviously because the first thing that happens is they lose their period. Mm-hmm. So they don't bleed each month. And so they might still have a cycle, but when that week drops off where you bleed, you know that your energy levels have dropped below a certain point, that your body is now in preservation mode. And so it's stopped that from happening to save your energy. But it still happens to men, but they don't have that first initial sign. So it can actually be a little bit more unknown in men, whereas in females, we kind of know that quite quickly. Yeah.
Did you feel like something you're just like, well, I'm just going to ignore this, or I'm just going to push on, like I'm racing, this is like, you know, where was your mind going with that? Because you saw the red flag and then you're like, whatever. Like, how do you move past that as an app? Like, you're a determined person. Do you remember like what you were thinking when that was going on?
Yeah, 100%. I was so pushed past it for probably 5 years.
Oh, wow.
So I had it for quite a long time, probably even in triathlon. And I was like, whatever, this is what happens. It's changed a lot, the mindset around all of this, but for a really long time, and probably like the generation before my time was like, yeah, I mean, that happens to everyone. Like everyone, if you're fit, you're going to lose your period. And that's kind of a good thing because you know that you're fit. It's this different mindset that was around. And I'm sure some people might still have that mindset. Like also as a young teenager, no one wants that to happen. It's inconvenient. It's like, get out of my face. Like, I don't want to have to deal with this every month. Mm-hmm. It's annoying. So like when it happens, you're kind of like, oh, well, cool, whatever. I don't have to deal with that anymore. But as I got older, maybe a little bit wiser, I was like, I kind of want my body to do the thing that it's supposed to do. And I do want to have kids in a few, you know, in 5 or so years. And I don't want that to be a struggle. I don't want to be having years of like trying and having to have intervention. And I just want it to be a smooth process because it's so devastating for so many people that can't happen for. And I do know some people that it's a product of what they put their body through, you know, that took away their fertility. So I didn't want that to be me. And that was definitely in the back of my mind.
Something else I was thinking of when you talked about burnout, I think that means a different thing for a lot of different people. For you, what was the burnout? Was it physical, mental, emotional, all of the above? Do you remember what that vibe was when you were going through it? Just like when you said, just get me out of here. Like you were done.
Yeah, it was all of the above. And I believe that that's actually how we function all the time. We're not a one-dimensional human that only has to worry about their physical body or only has to worry about your emotional state. We are, it's what I would call kind of the three-way yin and yang, where we have the body, mind, and the soul all working together all at once. And if you're not taking care of either one of those aspects, then you're ignoring a huge part of you, and that will bleed into the other areas too. So if you're not taking care of your physical body, your mind and your soul are going to kind of sink to that level at which you are taking care of it. So, and the same with the opposite, because a lot of people take care of their physical body and then they're not taking care of their mind or their emotional state, and then your performance drops. Or you're not doing things that light your soul on fire, and then your mind suffers, and then your performance drops. Do you know what I mean? So it's all working together all the time, but we just sometimes are so fixated on the power or the numbers or whatever it is that we forget about the other parts, and they're so important. Mm-hmm. I know that more now than I did back then. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's even more now. It is watts, 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 watts. And yeah, it's misleading for athletes, especially newer ones, who think as long as my FTP goes up, as long as I have big VO2 max, I'm going to go crush these races. And there's all these other little things that go on. And I'm sitting here nodding my head from my own personal experience that we won't get into. But yeah, it's like the mind, body, soul, it's your thinking that drives so much of this. And so this is actually, I think, a good segue, unless we miss anything between then to more the present. You know, being a pro cyclist is the ultimate dream for a lot of people, but it seemed like you realized, hey, this is not mine, and you're going to make a shift and follow more of a calling, and you're now a mindset transformational coach. Or what else, how would you describe yourself today as career-wise?
Yeah, so the title is so freaking hard to pin down of what I do, because it's such a big thing. And essentially now you're right, I did. So if we backpedal a little, in the final year of my career in cycling was COVID. So there was a lot of time spent not knowing, training for I don't know what. And then finally, middle of the year, you can go overseas. Had to get an exemption from my country, which I also felt incredibly guilty, because everyone else was locked down in Victoria, in Melbourne, was like one of the highest lockdown cities, I think, in the world. They spent 280 or something days in lockdown, where they couldn't go within like a 5 kilometer radius of their home. And sometimes it was even worse than that. So thankfully I wasn't in Melbourne. I was in a bit more of a regional area, so we did have more freedom and I could ride my bike outside, and I spent most of the year being freaking grateful that I could do that. And then I could go overseas, and I was like, I remember a conversation with my brother. He called me and he was like, why can you go overseas? And I was like, well, it's my job. And he's like, yeah, but I don't get it. Like, there was this, I don't get why you can go. And I was like, you know what? Honestly, I don't either. I honestly don't get why I'm allowed to do what I love, but there's so many other people that aren't allowed to do what they love. And they're suffering mentally. They can't see their family. Like, there's all of these things. And then when I got over there, I was like, wow, this part of the world is functioning so differently. Like, why are we in Australia not doing it like this? And what is happening? Why is there such a divide? Why is it so different over here? Just felt so much more free. And yeah, we had to do tests before races and stuff, but that was the worst part. It was like, you know, I felt like I had so much more freedom, and yet my partner and my family back home were stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was definitely an internal battle going on throughout that year. And I found it really hard to care about bike racing, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I found it really hard to want to beat people and prove myself to my team that I was worthy of a contract for next year, because that's essentially why I went overseas, was because I got told that I had to if I wanted to race next year. And there was a lot of stuff that I won't get into around that, but essentially I said, I don't want to do this anymore. This is me done. I have so much that I want to look forward to going home. And I honestly, from probably the moment I got there, I couldn't wait to get home. And I knew in myself that kind of told me something, because I was also watching other cyclists who were so grateful to be there and they were like loving it. And I was like, I don't feel the same.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was, it was kind of that internal battle, as well as I can't wait to start my life. It felt like I can't wait to start my life without cycling when I get home. That was kind of my vibe that I was feeling the whole time. And I was no longer willing to sacrifice my body, my mind, my relationships, my passion, my purpose anymore to race bikes.
So yeah. When you're going through this, are you thinking of what's next? Are you worried about what's next? You're like, wait, I'm going to not do this anymore.
Yeah.
Am I going natural path or where, you know, that's a huge decision. I think it's important even for amateurs to think about when we're doing sports as adults, like what's the why? Why am I doing this? And it's just,
yeah.
I think about it a lot because I personally went through it last year of I'm 42. I still race a ton. I train a ton. I got married 3 years ago. And I'm like, last year is like, what am I doing right now? Should I be doing, should I be doing these podcasts? Like what is going on? And so I think it's a good thing to, I tell athletes all the time. And somebody one time said to me, like, you realize, like you asking me this, I might leave as an athlete. I'm like, dude, I don't want you to pay me and not be all in on this. Like, cause you're not going to get better as an athlete. If you're like, I kind of like this, like I'm sorting, like, dude, if this is not what you want to be doing, I will give you a big hug and like, go do
fly
something.
Away, babe.
Yeah. Flap your wings. Like, and I just think it's so many people, no, I shouldn't say so many people. I feel bad when someone is racing because they've raced. They're going to these races because they've been going to these races for the past X number of years. It's like, that's not why you want to go. And that's what really freaked me out. I was like, shoot, do I even want to go to this race? And so I left and I was like, I don't want to do this. And I was like, God, I missed that a lot. And I'm so thankful that I did that. Or I'd probably be in the same 18 months later, still being like, should I be doing this? And you know, so for everybody, take that thought. So didn't mean to veer the story off. So what were you thinking? Where did you decide? What was like the next 6 months?
So I guess in my time overseas, I spent 3 months over there during that year. Such a tiny little time, amount of time. But before I left, my partner and I had kind of been teetering on the edge of like, is this what I'm going to do for the next 5 years? And I remember us having a conversation of, this next 3 months is you figure it out for 3 months. Like just go away and feel what you want. We all know how that ended. I didn't want it anymore. So when I kind of had been playing with this idea of retiring, I was also thinking about what do I want to do next? And I had so many ideas. Like they were coming out my ears. I also had a coach at the time. So I invested in this coach, in my own coach, for my mindset and my own transformation in order to get better on the bike. That was my initial investment, was like, I need to work out my mindset because it's not good. I don't really believe in myself enough to get to the next level with cycling, and I really want to. That was my initial thought in investment. What it turned into was like, everything that you're doing is what I've felt in my soul. I've been passionate about my whole life. So I've always been that person that people go to, and I can hold space for people and I can see people. I can truly hear them and listen and understand, and also give hard truths when hard truths are needed. See the blind spots, see what's underneath what they're saying, like all of this kind of stuff that I naturally loved to be that person. And I genuinely have always cared, a little bit like what you just pointed to, about what people would really love to do. And I don't care what that is, as long as you are on that path, I support you 100%. So that brings us to, I guess, now, like the initial question that you asked. Now I help people reconnect with that version of themselves and give them permission, give themselves permission to follow that. And that might mean that they're doing the exact same thing but they're doing it with a deeper understanding. They're doing it with a bigger permission slip to be themselves fully while they do it. And the reason why people need this is because there's so many blocks. There's so many internal emotional blocks or belief systems or conditioning that stop us as individuals from fully expressing, I call it the truth of our soul, or who we truly are, or our true potential, call it what you want. But I feel like a lot of us, especially high achievers, have this inner knowing of like, there's so much more to me. Mm-hmm. There's so much more in here that I can give. There's so much more that I'd love to be able to express. There's so many more levels that I want to climb to, but I just can't seem to grasp a hold of it. And I don't really know how to get there. So yeah, I'm kind of that bridge.
Do you think people are more worried about seeing themselves fail if they go after that, or other people seeing them possibly fail if they go after that? Do you know what
I
mean?
I think it's a fear of failure on both aspects, like pouring a lot of your time, money, energy, intention into something that could possibly fail. And then I also think that it's a fear of success sometimes. Sometimes people, you would be surprised the amount of people that don't want to be big. They don't want to be big. They don't want to be seen. And because being big and being seen can actually feel lonely. It can actually feel like I'm no longer part of the herd, because I'm like the big one that stands out from everything. So I'd rather just like shrink myself down and be small. And they're also worried that what if I get really big and then my family don't love me anymore because I'm doing this big thing and I'm not being with them in their smallness or in their mediocrity. And I'm not saying that everyone's family is mediocre, but that's the subconscious kind of belief system that a lot of people don't realize that they even have. And it's about finding that and clearing it out.
Yeah. Did you feel that after you won the national championship, your first race? Were you all of a sudden, I'm sure it's like there was probably, who the hell is this new girl? And who's like, this girl doesn't deserve it? Or, and then there's the other people like, oh my God, this person's amazing, and they're praising you maybe too much. And you're like, did you feel weird being that person?
Initially, there was so much media attention that it kind of blew my socks off. I was overwhelmed by it. Everyone wanted a piece of me for about 2 weeks straight. I don't think I had time to even think about myself. And because we also immediately have the Tour Down Under after Nationals. So there's a lot happening in January. And then Cadel Evans road race, it's like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And so that whole period in Australia where I've just won the national championships was like media galore. Everyone was all over me. And I think I dealt with it fine at some points, but I really remember consciously having to turn my phone off and leave it because I was like, I just can't anymore. I just can't keep checking social media and seeing how many likes people have now done on my Nationals post, or checking my emails to see how many more people want to speak to me for an interview, or like whatever else it is. I was becoming really obsessed with having all the attention. And I remember consciously being like, just cool your jets. Like, you have to give yourself time to breathe. And then it all wore off. And then it was just me and my thoughts and my insecurities and everything that I had before I crossed that line all came flooding back. And it was almost like at a heightened level, because now I had a green and gold jersey that I had to carry the entire year. And I felt like everyone was looking at me, expecting me to race really well. And I wasn't racing well. I was DNFing a lot of times because I was outside the time limit or for whatever other reason. And yeah, it was just a really tough year of my own high expectations and that pressure of performance from, I felt like, an entire nation, right? Not just my coach or my family or my team.
Jeez.
I was like, I have this whole Australia looking at me, which is ridiculous to think of now because it's totally not true, but that's was my mindset. Yeah.
I think, and it's even for listeners there, you can like, it's easy to picture the macro of all of that, like all those things that you're talking about, but I haven't been able to do many pro races, but I have in some, tour of Southland in New Zealand, DNF'd, got dropped. I can't remember what stage, and I was in Vuelta Ecuador and user error, my battery died. And so I get this like rental bike basically. And in, if someone hasn't done that type of race, watching, it's like you're in a city, right? There's the cars behind you. You're in this big peloton. There's the commissary, da, da, da. When you get left, I was in Ecuador by myself. And it was like, where, I don't even know where the race goes. Like I'm going through the town and people are pointing that way. And I'm like, wow, it's amazing. You're 3 to 5 minutes back for a little while. And then it's like 10 to 20 minutes back. And people have already like dispersed. And I'm, I hope that I'm going the right way. And so in the micro, like I can picture you in some of these races thinking, what the frick is going on? Like, is this real? Is this, I mean, it's,
oh my gosh, terrible. I have the biggest story about this as well, which is why after this one event, I then had a map of every single race that I put on my Garmin. So I knew where the race was going.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was one race where I got dropped in neutral.
Mm.
In the neutral section, I got dropped.
Been there.
and by the time the race flag had dropped, I didn't know where the race was going because something happened with the corners, the marshals, like whatever. I don't know what happened. Maybe they weren't quite there yet, you know, like, because you're still in neutral. So maybe the corner marshals had not quite arrived.
Yeah.
But I was going the wrong freaking way.
Oh my gosh.
And it was a point to point race. So there was no circuit. There was no laps. It was 100 plus, like 120 kilometers from one town to the next. And so I was stopping in every town, which way is Dupont, which way is Dupont? And they were like, you are a long way away from your destination. And I was like, I know that, you know, I'm like crying, I know. And they're like, okay, it's this way. And I'd stop in every single town. And they're like, it's this way, it's this way, it's this way. And yeah, cause you don't have your phone. You don't carry your phone in races.
Nothing. I luckily had a van that he didn't know where we were going, but he was following the race and like just spectating the race. And he drove behind me. And
lovely.
It was terrible. Just one gear. I was like, I just wish I had gears right now. This would be so amazing. Yeah. So what do you think for people listening who might be thinking, this is me, like I get in the way of myself. And you know, I think one of my friends is a leadership coach and I've learned some of these terms you've used of like figuring out how to hold space and how to, you know, unleash your greatness and like take your power back and things like that. And what, maybe this is two questions. I get bad asking two things, but you know, what are some of the biggest obstacles? You've mentioned some of them that you see most of the athletes that you work with, or you know, someone listening who's like, okay, I'm stumbling over myself. What tip can we give them to like get them going in the right direction?
Yeah, I feel like the first step is to understand that there's nothing wrong with you. At the core of your being, at the truth of your soul, you are completely limitless and you can move past this. This is not something that you have to be stuck with for the rest of your days. But it is going to take some introspective work. So that is the first understanding of like, okay, at least they have awareness that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than just get on the bike again today and go for another training ride and deal with it, just stop and ask yourself, how am I going to get through this? What are the things that I need to do to overcome this? And people usually start out a personal development journey listening to podcasts, grabbing a self-help book, trying to do some affirmations, whatever it might be. And I would suggest that if that's been you and you've done the breath work, you've done the meditations, you've done the ice baths, you've done all of these tools, tips, tricks, and hacks, then, and you still don't believe in yourself, or that there's still that nagging feeling of whatever it is that you're going through, then it would be time to reach out to someone who specializes in the kind of transformation that you want and to invest in it. To just have a conversation first, because you never have to choose the person that you first reach out to. Just do a little bit of research and find your person, and then go on a little journey, and you will be blown away by how this changes your life. And I'm not just saying that. Like, I've had probably 5 coaches now, and every single time I choose that person to guide me to my next level, it's like completely transformational. It's incredible, and I never regret that, making that investment. And it's obviously what I'm passionate about, it's obviously what I do, so it's kind of like, of course, Shannon, of course.
It's, yeah, but I, you know, I'm a huge fan of coaching, obviously. So yeah, I'm biased, but I was introduced to coaching through a mentor in my club. So I didn't get into cycling until later. I was 26, overweight, Cat 5, just like, I need to get my life together a little bit, and went through the amateur ranks pretty quickly. And the guy who was my mentor was like, you need a real coach, like someone. And I thought it was going to be the workouts. And I still talk to Jason every once in a while. I'm like, he made a comment one time of, man, it's not all the day to day. It's like helping you see the big picture, seeing season to season. You're 27 years old right now. Your best season is going to be maybe when you're 35, maybe when you're 36, like your training age is so little. And so I think also I don't know what it's like in Australia, but in the US, a lot of people find this sport later in life. And it's like, they're working and they're looking for something else. And, you know, they fall into it. And I don't think they always understand how good they can get. And just the coaching piece is so much more. Even somebody I have tried to self-coach before, and I have a new coach this year, and I made a comment about on Strava, and someone's, it's like, what's going to change? And I was like, wow, and I didn't want to say it because it sounds nasty. I'm like, wow, they have no idea what a coach does. Like, it's not, they're thinking just workouts, you know? And that's probably the last thing I need Landry for. I can give myself a ton of workouts. And so, yeah, I think I've always been surprised. I sold medical devices for a long time, just the surgeons and the C-level executives and people that I would work with internally that had coaches. And I'm like, wow, I always thought coaching was for athletics. And when it's personal development, business development, just your person, it's always been really inspiring to see who's leaning on someone else. And someone one time was like, dude, it's my teammate. Why would I want to do this by myself? And he was like, just a boss surgeon. And I was like, that's incredible, dude. I don't think people would think you would have a coach. It was just really cool way to think of it, I thought.
Yeah. We are not meant to do this. We are not meant to figure all of this shit out on our own. Like, we're conditioned to believe that our mental struggles, our belief systems, what we think about ourselves and the world around us is all of our own concoction of on our own, but it's not.
So there's a book I'm trying to think of who had recommended to me, Who Not How, and it's a different type of thread, but the thought process is, when I'm trying to accomplish something new, don't ask how can I do it, who can help me accomplish this. Like, you can't reach your highest highs if you do it on your own. It's just, you don't have enough time, you don't have enough energy, you don't have the resources to be in 15 different places at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any daily routine thoughts? You mentioned meditation, things that you personally utilize that help mm-hmm. you sort of, maybe I'll say, stay grounded or feel like you do well in the day, or however we want to phrase that.
Yeah. So I've dabbled in and out of like strict, structured routine and kind of disciplining myself to meditate or do breath work or journal every day. And I'm in a phase right now where that is a loose routine. So I don't have something that's like 5 minutes breath work, 10 minutes meditation. So I get up in the morning, I drink my cacao instead of having coffee, and I sit with myself in that time. So it might look like I feel like journaling right now. I feel like getting some stuff out on a page. Or it might look like, you know what, my body feels like it just needs to release some tension. So I'll do a bit of stretching. I might have some stuff that I've carried from yesterday that's still playing on my being. So I'll shake it off or try to feel into what my body needs and what my mind needs in order to release that. More so a definitely like a flow than it is a strict, structured morning routine. And I'm just listening to my body and listening to what it needs. And I guess the body, the mind, the soul, like I said before, they're all working together. So I'm listening to what that needs, what that inner voice is showing me I need to do in the morning in order to set up my day. And it's almost like washing off or rinsing off anything that's not serving me, mm-hmm. and then bringing in the attention and intention for what I want to create in the day.
I love that idea of intention. There's actually Cade Bickmore was on here and we were talking about workouts. And he's like, sometimes I think the intention of the workout is just as important as the execution of it. And sometimes the watts aren't there, but you still go out and you know, get what you need to get done in a different way. So I like that thought of the intention of the day. Do you set your intentions the day before, that morning during your cacao drink, or how do you map out the week?
So all different. So I set my intentions. Again, it's not like I write it down on the page every single day, but it's like an internal understanding of what the energy of my day looks like and what I would love to bring to it. So it's not, my intention is not what I want to get done in the day. It's like, how do I want to be? How do I want to move through this day? So this week has been pretty big. This week has been, I've been smashed and I felt tired. So my intention for the days have been to nurture myself, to lean into rest where I can, to just slow down in the moments between the hectic and to allow myself to just have that breathing space. So that's been my intention for the day, despite the fact that I have loads of things to do. My intention hasn't been like be at your best the entire day and like go, 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 go. It's been, hey, you know that you need to give yourself a little more love. So that's what your body, mind, soul is craving today. That's what you want to honor so that you can reach the end of the week and feel like you're not broken and in pieces, you know?
I think a lot of people do that to themselves. Of one thing I've tried to encourage athletes to do when I can tell that the workouts, it's not the workout, it's how the workout sits in their life. And I'm like, what was your to-do list today? And they'll send it to me. I said, what was the chance that you actually were going to get all of that done? Oh no, like I do like half of that. Well, then why the hell is it there? Because guess what? You're going to shift them to Tuesday and then to Wednesday and to Thursday. And then on Friday, you're going to be pissed off because you didn't do half of the stuff you said. And so I like your idea of the intentions not being the list of things. And it really, that's like the higher level of thinking about you in this universe, this space day to day. That's a really interesting way of thinking about it. Okay, so then what an athlete, you know, this again resonating with someone listening, they're maybe meditating, or maybe they haven't, maybe they haven't done any of this. You listed a bunch of things beforehand. You know, do you have anything, any resources on your website that they should, like a checklist of check out meditation? Maybe they don't even, maybe they've never meditated. Like, what's 101 of starting, or maybe it's like doing how you just described your morning. I mean, that's, I'm sitting here like, that sounds really peaceful. I need to make do my intention. And I think there's just other ways of sort of being creative with like to-do lists and not having our daily life become overwhelming. Because I know for myself, one thing I've tried to work on is I get extremely stressed when it's like a day I have to like go through all these athletes, and then maybe I have a podcast in a couple of days I need to prepare for, and blah, 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 blah. But like you made the comment, hey, I need to take care, I need some self-care. That's probably the last thing I'm going to think of. I'm like, I have this stuff that I have to do, and trying to be like, hey, you know what? Maybe if I take that 30 minutes, I'm going to do all of these things way better. And I've actually tried, if I'm in Training Peaks and I feel like I'm rushed, I usually shut my computer because I know I'm not doing a good job. And I'm like, that's, I would be so pissed if my coach was like blowing through the thing that was really important to me. So it's been trying to like realign things. So I kind of went on a tangent there, but where would people like, what are some things, let's go 101. So, and you kind of said this, but maybe even more specifically, like look into meditation. Like, how do we learn more about all this stuff? Like, you have such a deep knowledge of it, like really
basic. You have to remember that I've been probably on this journey since I was 8 years old. So I've grown up with self-development as part of my thing. And so that's credit to my dad. He was going through his own personal development journey when I was that age, and I was his springboard. And I'm very grateful to be, brought up in that type of way with the understanding of inner work. So it's been something that I've always been really curious about. So my one-on-one would be get curious, get really curious, and don't make it another thing on your to-do list. I hate that. Oh, it's like, it's not something else for you to get structured and diligent and strung up on. It's something for your soul, for your inner world, who's probably screaming at you right now to slow the heck down and spend some time with yourself. People are very turned off by that though, because they think it's unproductive. Like you just kind of pointed to that. I've got all this stuff I have to do. I can't slow down for 5 minutes of my day. Well, yeah, you actually can. You actually can. And when you do, you put a little piece of evidence into your subconscious of like, whoa, that actually made me feel better. Oh, I feel more clear. Wow, I feel like there's been a weight lifted off my chest. So what we're doing is we're just bit by bit adding little sprinkles of, say, evidence or growth to our subconscious that's then starting to understand the value of the inner work, or the value of being self-reflective or introspective, just pausing for a moment to go within, to say hello to your inner world and just say, hey, how are you today? Like, what's your vibe? How are you feeling? What do you need? How can I help you? You know,
I've definitely been guilty of being like, I don't have time for my 8 minute meditation right now. And it's like, hang my head. If I catch my, it's like, dude, get over yourself. You should just go.
Do you know what though? It's, I would say for you, it's because it's another thing that you've kind of told yourself you need to do. I need to make sure I'm doing this every day. I need to. No, you get to. This is a gift that you are giving yourself every day if you choose to. If you don't want to do a meditation, if you truly, truly don't want to do a meditation, don't do a freaking meditation. Go outside and put your feet in the earth, connect with nature. Go to see someone, go have a coffee with your best mate and just check in with each other. Like personal work, this type of work doesn't have to be one thing that you do the same every single day. Yes. It's listening to what you need and then trying to honor that the best that you can.
So what do you think about this? So there's one thing in that I have had to be okay with days that I don't ride, or like you said, skipping and meditate, like, or reading. So what I've, one thing in that trying to get in, I'm trying to get how this developed. Actually, I have an Excel sheet that you're probably immediately like, whoa, but stay with me for a second. I used to put on my to-do list, like read, I'm riding today. So when am I planning this? I like was trying to, like you hear people like be hyper productive, like plan a lot, and it just didn't vibe with me. But what I have is like things that are important to me. So meditation, painting, I have a fellowship I go to, writing my goals down, like sitting there and actually thinking what I want to accomplish in this life. But then it also has things like strength work, practicing Spanish, read, ride a bike. And I have, as the day goes on, at the end of the day, I have like a little, I take a color and on, I like highlight the box if I did and if I didn't. And then all I see is like a trend. Like, wow, I haven't gone to that meeting in a week. Is it actually important to me? Should I reconnect with that group? Or I caught myself being like, whoa, I haven't read in 2 weeks. Why is that? And I'm like, oh, because I'm freaking out. I was doing the YouTube channel. I was like, I got to do 3 videos a week. We're going to like do all this stuff. Blah, blah. And I was going insane. I'm like, I haven't even picked up a freaking book. Okay. Something is wrong. Like my, so I guess a little bit of organization, or maybe it's not like checklisting, but it helped me to kind of like see trends of where I was spending time and then asking myself, do I need to go like bring this into my life somehow, or does it mean nothing? And so it's just been, I just feel life goes by so fast. And you know, I think checking in every once in a while and just what I'm doing. Again, I think this is also part of like overthinking my why that stem from cycling. Like, why am I training 1,000 hours? Do I want to be doing that? Or do I feel like I need to do that to be where I want to be in a race? So I don't know. That's a lot, but I mean, is that too organized or is that like healthy? Is that not when that instantly hits you where you're like, maybe not, like, or is it just flow, be as long as I'm flowing with it and not being rigid? Like you said, I really think that's a good, that I'm taking away from this. If I don't want to meditate, don't meditate. That's not supposed to be forced to do. I love that. That will definitely have an effect on me.
So there's discernment in it, right? There's so much discernment in it. And what I think you're pointing to is what we could call the feminine and the masculine energy. So I don't know if you've heard of this before, but within us all, we have feminine and masculine energy. The masculine energy is the structure, the drive, the dedication, the putting the foundations in, the planning, the action taking, the doing, right? This is our masculine energy. So high achievers, athletes are very much familiar with this side of themselves. They're like, heck yeah, you give me a program, I'll tick it off. You show me how to do something, I'll do it. That's our masculine drive and our masculine energy. The feminine energy is the flow, the lack. To give it an archetype, it's like hippie vibes, like fully, dude, just whatever. Like, I'll go with the flow today. This is beautiful. And it's our creation as well. It's our birthing of ideas. It's our connection with our emotion, our ability to nurture ourselves and to love ourselves. This is the feminine. So it's like also the maternal kind of energy too, if you think about it like that. And what it sounds like is you're more balanced towards your masculine, which can spiral into the overthinking, the overplanning, the being too rigid, to being too hyper focused on things. So you've kind of just slipped a little bit out of that feminine flow, or just flow. If you don't want to use the word feminine, you can just say flow. And I need to bring a little more flow back into my life but I still need to have the masculine structure, or just the structure, if you don't want to say masculine. I need to have the structure in order for my flow to even just be able to dance within that. Because if I don't have any structure, I'm just blowing in the wind and nothing happens, right?
A life without purpose is a life lived by chance. I read that one time. It's something to that extent. And I was like, oof, yeah. I don't want that. That's bad. I don't. I just had a friend one time who I think at the time he was maybe 60, 65. He had retired and he knew I cycled a lot. And we were talking about different job opportunities. He said, all I want to tell you is that I don't have regrets. But I was super busy with my work. I was 40. I blinked and I was 60.
Mm.
And it wasn't bad, but I probably could have done some things differently. And it was because I was thinking about taking this position where I would probably not be riding. I would have been on call at this hospital and da da da. It would have been a massive life change. And he's like, you really love this thing. I don't know if you do. You know, but just think about that. And it was a very, it's always stuck with me. So this has been awesome. What's any topics that we missed or that you wanted to cover? I think this
but I did actually want to say one thing about the meditation, because it's annoying me.
Yes.
When I said, if you don't want to meditate, don't meditate. The discernment in that is like, you have to be honest with yourself though. It's like, if you're just making excuses as to why you're not doing the inner work and you're like, well, I don't feel like it. There's a difference. There's a difference between being too rigid and like, I want to do my 8-minute, 12-second meditation every single day. And if I miss it, then I'm berating myself.
Right.
There's that. And it's like, maybe you need some extra flow just to feel into what you need in the day. Or there's the person that's like, I don't meditate because I don't like sitting still or something like that. You know, it's right. Being honest with yourself and finding your own discernment in being dedicated to being your greatest self involves that humility and involves actually having to do the hard thing sometimes.
Yeah. I like that addition of being your greatest self. Like, you know, you can't not do this because you just want to go be lazy. That's not being your greatest self. And having the honest cut. No, but I think I even talked to a friend today who got sick, and he also rides and trains, and was just like, oh man, I'm like trying not to be hard on myself. I'm like, man, you're sick. Like, if you were being lazy or you weren't making time for workouts that you truly wanted to do because you're overworking yourself, then yeah, be hard on yourself. I see no problem with that. But when you're sick, you can't do anything about that. Like, I think, having the discernment is super important in so many different situations.
My question to you with that is, how do you act when you're sick?
So I have probably gotten better, but only within the past year. I have experienced, you know, like trying to ride when I'm sick and it just makes it worse. So I've gotten better at getting off the bike, but I, you know, and I always do try to listen to my own, the things I'm telling other athletes, which I do. I mean, I freak out. If 2 days are not riding or training, I'm like, oh my God. And I would honestly just tell another athlete, dude, you're going to be like a little bit more fresh. You're going to come back. You're going to crush it on Thursday. Like, don't even sweat it. And so I try to listen to my own self. But yeah, I just love riding so much that if I'm sick, I really don't. But if I'm like missing stuff, I try to shift things around. I mean,
Yeah. That was just an interesting self-reflection for you.
Oh yeah, I think about it. I get to think about it all the time. There's always somebody sick or somebody's missing this or whatever. And I mean, that actually on the other end of the spectrum, it's like when people are, if I open up Training Peaks in 2 or 3 days are missing or someone's just getting sporadic, I'm like, hey, how are you? Are you not feeling this? Like, you do you need a break? Do you need like, I like to be, I've always been, whether it was in the hospital setting, whether it's even like working with, so I was a sales rep. So if I was not selling a lot of this one product, I would be really proactive in talking to the product manager, to the sales director, to whoever, to be like, hey, so I'm not crushing it right now. Like, well, let's chat about this. And so I think, whereas internally, I just wanted to go hide because it's like no one likes to be sucking at what they're supposed to be selling. In sales, you are your sales number. So when I think about people that are paying me to help them ride, if they're not riding, you're hoping that they're coming around because you don't want to lose an athlete, I'll be honest. But at the same time, it's like we said before, it's like, dude, if you're not into this, you need to go flap your wings. Or are you just busy? Like, can I help you in any way to like get motivated or like reshuffle things or whatever? And you know, sometimes ZZ is like, well, you had this 2-hour workout done. I only had an hour and a half. And I'm like, so you did zero? Like, wait, what? There's a disconnect here. Like, you know? And so, but. Well, thank you for doing this. This is what's the best way for people to keep up with you? Because I know you're on Instagram, so we're gonna post that. Website, TikTok, Twitter, blogging, like anything else, or what's the best way?
IG is the best way to find me. And if you have any inquiries, you can DM me or you can email me, which you can find my email contact stuff on my website.
Okay.
And yeah, we can go from there. But I'm
like Shan said before, you contacting her does not mean you are automatically tied into something. Just reach out. If you have listened to this and said, this is me in one aspect, DM her. Hey, you guys were talking about this scenario. That is me. Just say that and see what she says. Like, start a conversation. Don't be scared. She's not going to bite.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this. This is awesome. I think it's just a topic that is, just as I was saying, is trying to follow what my friend DDA has been doing has been reflective and thinking about just putting some thought before I take action. And so I think just what you're getting into, and I'm sure just the scenarios that you get to work through with people have to be so not rewarding, but just like you must learn so much from that also. And that it's like the two-way relationship has to be really cool. That's one thing I love about coaching, is like just having a team, like I'm their teammate, but they're my teammate too. Like I take some, you know, so like it's really,
we'll be looking at the connections, the transformation that I get to witness, but also the growth that happens for me as well in the work that I do. Yeah, it's all it. I just love it. I love all of it.
That's awesome. Well, Shannon, thank you so much for doing this. Everybody, check out her Instagram, hit her up with a message, let her know what resonated with you. And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you all soon.